Meet Nothando Mpala, a social entrepreneur and global events director at Make It Media. She is also a part of the Power Base Foundation, an organization passionate about using entrepreneurial initiatives to solve the issue of multidimensional poverty. She helps run Nakatech, an organization focused on empowering young people with coding and tech skills to improve their earning power and future prospects. Come along and join the conversation. So welcome to Conversations with Lila B. Nothando. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh no, of course. So Nothando, I've already briefly introduced you. I guess my first question for you would be, who is Nothando? Like, away from what you actually do, how would your family and your friends describe you?
So I would say that people describe me as sort of like a chilled person. I love watching movies. I'm a movie buff. I like watching action thriller. That's my thing. And I would say I'm just really chilled. Like, I don't do much. I like to have a lot of fun. I like to go out to different places. I'm an explorer, I would say. And I guess that sums me up in a sense.
That's interesting. I like that you said that you're an explorer. Yeah, because I think it'll come up a bit later, but I think you've sort of lived all over the place, so it's not surprising that you're an explorer. So tell me a little bit about your childhood and your upbringing. Where did you grow up? What's your family like?
So I was born in Zimbabwe. My mom's Zambian. And I stayed in Zimbabwe, I would say, until I was 6 years old. And it was my sister's graduation. She was in the UK at the time. And we came here for her graduation, which we were only meant to come here for like a week, 2 weeks max. And at the time, there's a lot of stuff happening in Zimbabwe. And so my mom's sisters actually convinced her to stay in the UK. So I literally came here with one suitcase, really and truly. And basically we decided to remain here, and I had to kind of navigate now as a young person in the UK, which is quite tricky, I would say, because I think I was so used to the culture at home, and coming here was so different. Even just, you can imagine that being at 6, 7, you're still learning even just how to read, how to write and all those kind of things. So it's like transitioning here was very different. I had an accent. So as you know how it is when you get into school, like kids make, because they don't understand your accent. And you're also trying to understand their accent. So it was a very, I would say for the first 2-3 years of my life being in the UK, as from 7 to 10, it was very a complicated time for me. And I just knew that I just had to learn how to be strong. My mom worked a lot as well. So my mom used to go for night shifts. You know, you come to the UK and it's like, it's not this glamorous life that you always thought it would be. It's actually much harder than being at home to some degree, because you don't get access to the same sort of living that you had before. So when I was at home, it was like we had a big house, we had a garden, boy, we had a maid, we had a driver. And it's like coming to the UK in a one-bedroom flat, sharing with my mom, my sisters would come here and there, and just having to manage that was very interesting. And we did that. I mean, I was kind of like dealing with me and just my mom for a while until my sister came back from uni. And it just, that's how I kind of navigated around, just learning how to be more independent as a young person, very young person. I had to do that very, very quickly in a very foreign land. And then also trying to infuse my culture was a very interesting one as well. So in a way, I think trying to fit into the UK culture, I lost who I was, because I tried to fit in for a long period of time. Even in high school, it was like, yeah, you're African, but you're British. And I would even say it only really happened where I started thinking, wait, I want to embrace who I am and my culture and everything about me. Probably later on in my early 20s, that's when that kind of transition happened. Because when you generally grow up, you realize that you like who you were, like who you are, like you're evolving and you're growing and you're learning more stuff about yourself. And I think you accept yourself more. Whereas when you're a child, you're just trying to fit into whatever the mold is at the time. And it's funny because I never really fitted in anything, really and truly. So yeah, it was interesting growing up. Being half Zambian, being half Zimbabwean, trying to fit into both as well as trying to fit into the culture of the UK. I think I'll stop.
No. I think that's very interesting because it's relatable to me. I think only in my early 20s did I start embracing who I was because, you know, I'm Zimbabwean, born there, but grew up in Zambia because both my parents had moved here. So it was also a thing of, okay, I live here, but I visit Zim so much and I speak Ndebele, but I don't really fit in with Zambia because I don't speak the local language. But at the same time, I don't fit in Zim because I don't know everything. I don't live there. So that was also like a thing for me. And then I went to an international school. So like being one of the few Black kids there, then how do you fit in when there's all these other like Americans and people from other countries? And then going to uni in like America and all those things and going to SA and feeling like you still don't fit. And then being like, wait, why am I always trying to like fit in with other people or shrink myself to fit in? And why don't I just embrace myself?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think there was a point in school time where I embraced being Caribbean and I wasn't Caribbean at all. But at the time, like, I'm being real honest, like, at the time, that's what was cool, let me say. Like, it was cool to be a Caribbean, and it wasn't cool to be African. So, yeah, I was Caribbean for a while. And then it was, as you grew and you realized, like, hold on, like, I am who I am, and that's okay, even if you don't like it.
Yeah, no. I giggled because it reminded me of going to America. And as much as I was like a teenager and approaching my 20s, it was also like, oh, but being African in America isn't cool at the time in like 2004. Yeah. It was like, no, so then fit into African American culture. But that's not my culture. That's not who I am. So, you know, there's a bit of identity crisis, I think, especially when you move around and when you're an immigrant. And it's always nice to come full circle and actually, you know, get back in touch with who you really are.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's great because I think you do have to go through those moments in your life in order to really get to where you need to be, if that makes sense. It's all part of the journey.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. All right, so I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about the work that Power Base Foundation does and how you got involved in it. So if you could tell my listeners, like, what is Power Base Foundation? What's the work that's being done and how you're involved?
So the Power Base Foundation is an organization that was birthed out of a community of young people who are entrepreneurs, who are professionals, who are doing extremely well in their industries and who want to have social impact in the world, positive social impact in the world. So we're all young people, and we decided that, you know, there's certain initiatives that we all wanted to be a part of. So we thought, let's just create a social enterprise and start doing the things that we foresaw, or things that we had imagined doing. So one of my colleagues, his name's Michael, he runs an international tech school and it's called NACA Tech Academy. And what started initially as him just training one young boy in how just learning skills like creating a website, coding, and cybersecurity ended up expanding when I started talking to different people in Zambia. And a lot of them were like, oh my gosh, I would so love to be a part of a tech school and learn those skills. And I've got a nephew or I've got a cousin, because basically I was part of a Zambian group called the Zambia Network. And I've been a part of a lot of diaspora community groups for a while, and I've helped with a lot of different things over time. So I was speaking to somebody and they were like, oh yeah, I would really love to be a part of that. So I spoke to Michael and said, okay, how can we expand this? And he was already kind of expanding it because he was getting students in the UK. He had some people that he knew from Nigeria that were getting involved in it as well. So literally he was like, let's just open up a registration and whoever wants to be, as long as they come from a low economic income household, they can participate in it. Because the whole point of the tech school is we want to enable young people who don't necessarily have access to these resources to be able to make their own income. So basically, I sent out emails, messages, everything, and we got so many different people that wanted to be a part of it. They were like, my nephew would be a part of it. We registered, I think it was 30 to 40 students from Zambia. And this is not just even Zambia. We had a student that was Zambian but living in Morocco. We had students that are Zambian but living in Malawi. We had students from Malawi. It just became this overnight an international tech school. And it's been running for, I would say, almost a year now. And we teach these students different tech skills, hoping that they could use that to earn their own income, you know, and maybe build their own business and helping other people create their own websites or whatever they might want to do with the experience that they've had. It then expanded to us having a connection with the International Zambian STEM Foundation, you know, sort of creating a partnership. I think we're still working out what that looks like in terms of what we want to do with maybe rolling out these this tech school as a after-school activity. So we're still working with them with that. Our hope is by summertime to have a proper curriculum after-school club for maybe two or three schools by then, or even at least just letting people in Zambia who are interested in this and who have young people that can participate being a part of it. The other part of what Powerbase does is we partnered up with WEEP, which is in Zambia. Mm-hmm. And I loved what Elena was doing with, you know, going into rural parts of Zambia, doing the education about hygiene and also just like safe, what you know, sex education, everything else, and handing out pads to these women. So we partnered up with her. We donated some money and it covered, I believe, 100 girls for a year.
Oh, wow, that's quite impactful. Because, you know, I mean, of course you as a woman, you understand the gravity of the whole period poverty initiative and like how it's just kept girls out of school and women and girls are lacking educational opportunities just because of something that's biologically beyond their control.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, for years, I've wanted to be a part of and help deal with the pad poverty issue in the world. I think because I come from an events management background and I've always used the events that I've hosted. So at a point in my life, I used to do women focused events to help them with business and just like general workshops. And what I used to do is I used to donate a percentage of that money to contribute into PADS. And at the time, there's an organization called the £1 Million Campaign that was running in Zimbabwe. So I assisted them, and after a while it's like I lost connection with them and I wanted to find something that would kind of do the same thing. So it was nice when we linked up with Elena and started a system with that. I think the great thing about this is we're very new. I would say we're under a year old. And things that we've been able to do in the short time we've had have been very inspiring, but we've also have learned a lot of things, of better ways of doing stuff. And I think the core thing we want to be able to do for not just all the initiatives we're part of is to be very clear that we want to create sustainable goals that will allow these young people to be impactful themselves. So when a kid comes and learns these tech skills, we want them to be able to go and teach somebody else those tech skills. and also be able to build an income from it. So we're trying to figure out more ways of making everything that we do more sustainable. So even with the pads, it's great to give pads, but the reality is your period comes where, you know, it's never going to stop coming. So how can we create something where you don't have to rely on us anymore for pads? You can now, you know, there's either somewhere where you can go, or you can, you know, make reusable pads or whatever it may be. We're still kind of researching and looking into the best way of doing certain things. But mm-hmm. I think we've had a good start.
Yeah, that's interesting. So going back to the NACA Tech initiative that you're talking about, when you say a place where people can come and learn, because obviously you're talking about kids participating when they are Zambian living in Malawi or Zambian living in Morocco. So how does yeah. the actual training or tutoring work?
So currently we have an online platform. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the technical names of them because that's more Michael's area who runs it. I just sort of assist in the sense of the project management aspect of staff. But we have an online platform, and we also have different platforms where they do learn how to code. So you can almost do it on your phone or on a laptop, as long as you have Wi-Fi. We were lucky that last year we got some sort of grants or sponsorship that allowed us to actually facilitate, give some of the students routers. So some of the students we had in Malawi, some of the students we had in Zambia actually got laptops, which was what enabled and helped them, you know, be able to actually participate in the class more effectively. So it is an online platform at the moment. Our dream would obviously to have it in schools and be part of the curriculum, because we do think these kind of skills are vital, especially with the growing world, especially the way technology is growing and evolving. We would like to have that in schools. But I think for now, it is an online platform that we run. And I think that's where the connection with the Zambian STEM Foundation will allow us to hopefully go into schools and run it like as a physical classroom activity. But we would need obviously assistance of teachers who currently stay in Zambia. So that is a huge process in itself.
Yeah, no, it's quite the undertaking. But as you've said, I think STEM is something that every kid can benefit from. And especially when we're looking at like technology itself and looking at things like coding, because it has become such a big part of how we get things done in this world. So, I mean, I commend Michael and you for helping him with it, because I think if more kids could code, I think it would also give them access to better opportunities. Just not even within the country, but like globally. And I think the pandemic has taught us one thing of you can work remotely and you can do things from home. So, I mean, I imagine the possibilities are sort of endless for a young person who's able to have these skills and able to actually work globally, but remotely from home.
Yeah, definitely.
That you guys as Powerbase, I think, are doing some work in rural and marginalized communities regarding births and maternal health.
Yeah. So we're still in the development. Yeah, of course. So we're still in the development of what that would potentially look like. One, the CEO, Simi, who helps us kind of, you know, she's more of the operations of the organization, which still trying to kind of figure out how that will look like and how we can basically just provide more information about safe deliveries, antenatal care, and also postnatal information for women who are in those areas who don't have access to that information. And also, I know that there's a lot of danger around people trying to have self-abortions, give themselves self-abortions, and then there's also the ladies that actually facilitate this and actually make an income from doing illegal abortions. So we also want to bring awareness on about that, and also, you know, train hopefully some midwives and young with midwives that are currently in university that want to be a part of these kind of initiatives and don't necessarily have access to it. But also we want to empower some of the young girls that, you know, just don't have that information and are making bad choices and choices that will affect their bodies. So I think we're still kind of figuring out the best way to, you know, facilitate that. So I think that's one of the projects that isn't yet out yet, I would say, but is in the works.
Well, I think it's an important one, and sort of tying in with all the other stuff that you've spoken about, whether it's period poverty or whether it's tech, it is that thing of leaving people and different communities with more sustainable solutions. So the idea of training people, not just giving them the information, but training a midwife or someone who's younger, because I think maternal deaths in this country are quite a staggering statistic. I don't have it on hand right now, but I know from my experience being in the field that it's not uncommon for young women, especially even adolescent youth, to die while giving birth or not have access to certain healthcare. So I do think the only way these solutions can be sustainable is obviously through working with the communities and training people and hoping they can further that training.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I also know that you are part of Make It Media, which is a digital marketing agency.
Yeah, we're a creative agency, and we focus on, so I focus more on the events aspect of things, but it's four of us. We focus on PR, media, marketing, and then events. And so we tie all of those four things together when it comes to our clients. We do our best to offer them a comprehensive plan that assists with even just social media marketing, getting your brand out there and getting the right people to see it. Also just promoting your products, getting the right influencers to see, to advertise what products you have. So we just help businesses really get themselves out there. It was birthed last year in just before COVID happened. And what ended up happening is we helped a food brand who was making a lot of money outside. So they were street food. So they would have carts in different areas of central London that would bring a lot of revenue because people come out the offices, you know, buy food from them. So we assisted them in, because they were going for a transition. So imagine being a food place where you had a footfall of hundreds of people come in a day to be on zero because COVID doesn't allow anyone to go outside. So we had to kind of help them get online. So we helped them with getting a booking system so that they could do home deliveries, and also just getting their brand out there and helping them create an online community. So that helped us. And we kind of then started working with different clients across, you know, different industries. And yeah, that's who we are today. We're now in a position where we are trying to expand our services, working with more international clients in Africa, actually. So I've got a client in Zambia currently who we're working with, and it's been a very interesting journey.
I can only imagine. I've worked in advertising and in digital in Zambia, so can only imagine. But I think it's very interesting that, of course, I think when you're on the inside, you've known that digital is the way forward and that there's so many marketing opportunities and so many ways for people to sell their product, have their product delivered to customers, consumed by customers. Seeing as how the pandemic actually hit, have you really like sort of, have you guys seen that change in the way people are reaching out more for more of the digital marketing side of things, or how people are asking, like, I didn't do this before, my business was fine because, you know, people in the neighborhood would support or whatever. So have you seen a sort of shift in the way people are thinking?
Yeah, I have seen a lot. I think in some way it's been interesting because I think it's brought, so maybe before where we didn't have a pandemic, it was very separate. So you do your own thing, you almost wouldn't know a business existed. It's been interesting because you see that there are people that, number one, were probably not even visible at all when before the pandemic happened, because they worked the way they worked and it worked for them. But now they want to be online, and they not only want to be online, they want to have an online community. And I think that's what makes businesses different. It's no longer about just having your business. It's how are you having that close relationship with your customer? Because people are looking at that. It's a very saturated market now, especially online. I mean, there's so many things online right now. So it's if I want food, there's so many different online food places. And I think what we're seeing now is that brands are asking how can they be different? How can they connect to their audience in a different way from another brand that's exactly the same as them? And what we're finding is we're really trying to encourage a lot of brands to have that distinctive identity and have a story behind why they are who they are, and also have a deeper relationship with their customer apart from them just buying goods from them. And that in itself has been interesting. It's been an interesting journey because brands, you start to realize that brands don't really know who they are,
it totally makes sense to me. I think even being someone who has started businesses before, one of which is like Restaurant Week Lusaka, but like other things that I've done, I think sometimes when you start something, you're like, okay, this is what we're doing. But in terms of identity, a lot of the times you haven't actually settled and honed into like, what is your brand identity? Like, what are you about? Because you say, okay, this is my target market, or this is my possible clientele, but like, what do you know about them? Do you have a pre-existing relationship, or are you working on building, as you said, that community? Because I feel like once people feel like they're a part of a community, then the brand itself and the work that you're doing becomes even more successful because people have a connection.
Yeah, and that's what we've been seeing. We've been seeing that the more customers who have connection with the brand itself, like they have that relationship, tend to be the loyal customers, tend to have more interaction with their, for example, on Instagram. And the more community that you can build as a brand, the more you can kind of expand your brand identity or what you're trying to do. So I know even with the food brand that we had, even though it's just food, you look at brands like Nando's who have expanded who they are completely. Nando's now do cooking shows. They now do, they now support musicians and festivals and things like that. And that's because they had that relationship. They understood the culture of their audience and they embraced it. So we're trying to kind of encourage the same thing with a lot of other businesses. And it's been fun. I mean, in terms of the events area of things, it's been very slow, as you would imagine, especially in the UK. You can't do any events at the moment. And it's been like that for the past year, I would say. But the great thing is that working with international clients means that we can now kind of revamp and do events because everyone else is open apart from the UK. But even that in itself has been an eye opener because everyone does events very differently. And I guess I'm kind of walking through the steps of, okay, getting the connections, because a lot of having events and making events happen is about who you know. So we're really at the stage of building those relationships with people and making sure that we're getting in the right kind of media, connecting with the right media outlets, connecting with the right hotels and things like that. So it's really been a connecting season, let me say, or networking season, which I've been enjoying because I really love meeting new people and connecting with people, which has been great. So yeah, it's been a great experience so far.
Yeah, you sound like you're intrinsically in you, like you're all about like collaboration or like even working at events. That's something I've dabbled in or kind of been pushed into helping organize, and I'm like, no, this isn't my forte. I find it to be rather stressful.
It is. I'm not gonna lie, it is. I think to be in events, you have to genuinely have a true passion for it, because it is one of, I think it's one of the top five most stressful industries ever to work in. It's really hardcore. It's long hours. It's really, really trying to connect with people and consistently as well. It's a lot of components coming together, but I genuinely love it. I love every moment of it. I love dealing with clients, and even some difficult clients who want things that seem very impossible, but making it happen is what I really enjoy. And also seeing the success and making sure that that event has come and people have enjoyed it and people have had a great experience from it. So it is stressful, but it has different elements that just, I can't put in words.
So actually, I never asked you, what did you study? Because you're in all these different sort of fields, which are actually closely related, but, you know, some might say a little bit different from each other.
I think my educational journey is very interesting and funny. I started off in uni doing international politics. I studied that for about a year and realized that as much as I loved it, it's not something I wanted to do full-time as a career. At the time, I remember I went to my advisor and I told her, you know, I think I want to take a gap year. I don't think I want to study this. And she basically said to me, like, if you don't go to uni, you have no other opportunity. Like, you're just going to end up having a normal standard job in the world and you're not going to like it, blah, blah, blah. And you can imagine having African parents and you want to drop out of uni, was like, no, you don't do that here. So I basically didn't tell my mom for like a month, and I looked at every other option out there to find something different before I had to actually tell her that I actually left university without consulting with her. So I kind of stumbled on a apprenticeship with the National Health Foundation, NHS, basically National Health Service.
Yeah.
And it was a project management apprenticeship for 2 years. So when I secured it, then I told my mom, and she was okay with it. She was just like, you know, this is your life, do whatever you want to do. If you think this will be a better route. So I did the apprenticeship for that 2 years. In that 2 years, I project managed refurbishments. I worked on service improvement projects. I worked on so many different things, and it helped me find what I really wanted to do. So I even worked on events at the time, open days and all sorts of stuff. So then I kind of went through project management roles. So I contracted. So I actually decided from very young, like 21, I was, that I wanted to just contract. And here, contracting means that I'm not full-time employment. I just work on different businesses. So I did that. And on the side, I was doing events. So I had my own events company. At the time, it was called Naylor Events Management. And I was doing that alongside doing contracts. So the money I'd make of contracts is what I'd pump into my business. And I was doing that for a while. And then I decided at a certain time to kind of shut down the events part and focus more on like working full time. I did that for maybe 6 months and I decided, no, I didn't like it. I want to go back to the way things were before. And that's kind of how I've grown. So I literally, then in the midst of all of that, I went back and I did events management with marketing communications qualification. I did that. So I just, as I was going along, I would get little qualifications that would kind of assist and help me kind of have more understanding of what I was doing. And a lot of it has been through experience, if I'm honest, doing stuff that didn't work. And I just knew, this is not going to work for me. And doing stuff that I thought, yeah, this is what I want to do and it makes sense. And I want to keep on developing and building on this. So yeah, I don't have like a heavy educational background like that, but yeah.
I think that's interesting that, you know, you still took a chance and saw that like what you were studying wasn't going to be it for you. And you still found a way to obviously hone your skills, actually learn how to do the things that you now do. So I think, you know, not everybody at the end of the day, some people don't have access to education, or some of us, you know, I studied things that I pretty much rarely ever work in, you know?
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, as we grow older, I think you discover that, like, that piece of paper, yes, while it is important and affords you opportunities, a lot of the times there's lots of bankers who I know who aren't bankers, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because I think a lot of my friends, it was a very lonely period at that time because I made a decision that was so different from what all my friends were doing. Everyone was at university. I was working full time. It was like a completely different language between us. And I think everybody just saw me like, what are you doing? and it's funny because a lot of the time when everyone was graduating, I was in a completely different position in my career. And I was working consistently, and people who I knew who went to university, who don't even do what they studied, were struggling to get jobs. And don't get me wrong, not saying don't go to university. I think university is a very useful tool, and I probably will go back at some point. But I think knowing what is for you is very crucial, especially when you're going into your career path, and really making sure that you understand what you're doing first. So I think don't rush into university. Make sure that you're making the right decision first, because a lot of people get debt out of university and then you don't use the degree. So it's like, what was it worth in the end?
Yeah, I do think it is important to try and figure out what, at least as close as you can, what the things are that you're interested in and what you can actually do. Because yeah, I think there's a lot of our generation of people who, you know, went, dropped out, or changed courses after 2 years, just because you discover that the thing you thought, or the thing that maybe other people valued and said you should do, or you were told you're good at, is not where your passion lies. And I think at times we have to remember that, of course, you need something to like pay the bills, but what better thing in the world than to actually be able to follow your passion and have that pay the bills and pave the way forward?
Yeah. And I think one thing I've learned as well is that your passion can only take you so far. I think why I've kind of gone into social impact is because I've realized that my passion is great. It helps me, but how am I helping others? I think I've been, from a young age, I've always been conscious of that. How can what I do also help somebody else? So I think the more you evolve into using your gift to help others, the more you will get the right direction of what you need to do. And that's what I found in my journey.
Not to speak for you, but I think what I'm hearing you say is a bit of, you know, your passion and your purpose.
Yeah.
Kind of your purpose should also help drive you, and you need to understand what that is.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. All right, well, before we wrap up, I guess my audience would want to know where they can find some of the projects or initiatives that you're working on. You know, you can maybe give us some of the Instagram handles or website information.
So we're going through a bit of a transition at the moment. So our website is currently down. We're working on changing a couple of things. But on Instagram, if you would like to follow Power Base Foundation, that's where you can find the foundation and what we do. If you want to know my our business, it is Make It Media, one word, underscore. So Make It Media underscore, and that's all the sort of creative agency, digital marketing that we do. And if you want to follow me, you can find me on Natando underscore Mpala, and that's my own personal page. And also I talk about the different things that I do here and there. So yeah, that's the best way I would say you can get involved. We do have a website, so if you go on all those Instagram links, you will see the access to the websites as well. So that's Power Base Foundation for the foundation and the initiatives. Make It Media underscore, that's for my creative agency, and Natando underscore Mpala, and that's for me.
Wonderful. I'm definitely going to make sure for my listeners that I put it in the show notes as well, all the information and where you can be found. I just want to say thank you so much for being on my podcast today. And also that I really think the work that you're doing is inspiring. And I think it can definitely motivate other people, whether it's to get involved or to think about what their purpose is, what their passion is, and what they can do.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And also, I would like to just add my Instagram. I'm very open. If anybody has any questions or want to know certain things that they want to ask, just DM me. I will message you and respond. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Check the show notes for links to Notando's work and find out where you can follow her on Instagram. Before we go, show a little love for your favorite podcast on Anchor by sending us a round of applause, giving us a star, or leaving us a voice message on Anchor. And who knows, you could get a shout out on the next episode. That's it for season 2, episode 3. Remember to look out for more episodes and continue to join the conversation. Until next time.